Coming up today, Microsoft has designed a smart bra to combat emotional eating in women. Plus, why falling in love with AI virtual assistants is closer than you think. And we learn about the significant challenges involved in launching a lesbian dating app. All that and more coming up. This is the Wired.co.uk podcast, your weekly guide to the important and the interesting, from science and tech to underwear research and the future of love. I'm your host, Nate Langson. I'm the editor of Wired.co.uk.
I'm Olivia underscore Solon.
And I'm Liat Clark.
Liat didn't mention it, but it's her birthday today. Happy birthday. She just told us something off air that was really quite sweet, that she's really happy because we're here. Otherwise, she'd have a crap day.
Yeah, that was the that was essentially it. And you made me laugh until I cried earlier. Which...
18 pictures of bad Santas. It's amazing what joy that can bring. So
it just hit a note, hit something in me.
This will be the last show of the year that I am on, sort of. The last regular show, at least. I'm going on extended holly breaks.
Yeah.
For Christmas. So Liv will be holding the podcast reins next week. But we do have, count them, three special editions of the Wired.co.uk podcast coming out in your feed on the website over the next few weeks during the Christmas break and New Year. All sorts of excitement.
Excitey bears.
Guests. We're going to do some specials in a way we've not done specials over the last 3 years. So do look out for those. But first, let's get on with this show, the news. Microsoft designs a smart bra to combat emotional eating.
Yes.
Is this... I mean, I know it is. Is it as... weird as it sounds?
It is exactly as weird as it sounds.
Yeah.
So the issue they're trying to tackle is the fact that a lot of people eat not only when they're hungry, but for a host of emotional and habitual reasons. And this can obviously lead to obesity.
I think we've all been there.
We've all been there. Today's been a rather emotional day, let's put it that way. And Microsoft has set out to create a system that could actually try and intervene before a person turned to food for comfort. And the solution is, of course, a bra.
Because it's only chicks that do this.
Well,
it is a woman's bra.
Yes.
I did wonder if men could do this. Men who are, let's say, portly in the chest area. But apparently this is specifically targeted to begin with at women.
Yeah, I think they haven't quite worked out how to do this for men without having to wear some extraordinary jock strap or something. But for now, it's looking at women, and it works by trying to monitor emotions by looking at two things: electrodermal activity, which is basically the conductivity of your skin based on how much you sweat. And the second thing they're looking at is electrocardiogram data, so heart activity data. And these, when used together, are quite good at gauging stress and excitement levels. So how stressed or calm you are and how bored or excited you are. And that using those as together can give you a good sense of what your emotions are at the time. And so what they've done is actually place these two sensors into a bra so that they could monitor these levels of stress and excitement at all time. And then they could use those measurements and calibrated with a food diary and stress diary to then be able to kind of work out when someone's about to start feeling those emotions that tend to drive them to food, and then provide some sort of intervention. And in this case, they used intervention based on an app. So it would detect that you were getting stressed, and then an app would, like, you know, a message would appear on an app saying, oh, it looks like you're getting stressed, perhaps we can interest you with a breathing exercise.
Oh,
for
nice.
Example,
man, I would
I
love
think
this
is a great idea. I was at first thinking you need a real good distraction, because if something came up warning me you're about to get even fatter, it's likely to drive me to the fridge in misery.
Yeah.
So you've got to have a good distraction.
I think what they were trying to do is make people more aware of their emotional impulses, and which cause them to eat, as opposed to necessarily, you know, being the kind of one-stop shop solution for obesity. Yeah. It was more about getting people in tune with, oh, hang on, this might be because I'm feeling stressed that I'm eating, as opposed to because I'm actually hungry. Because they actually, in the test, they found that although 87.5% of people were more aware of their emotional eating triggers, only 37.5% of people change their eating behavior as a result. So
that's me.
It's not, you know, yes, I realize I'm stressed, but I'm going to eat that cookie anyway.
Because it will make you feel good, and you know it will. You need something that's going to make you feel even better.
Yeah, but this has only been a prototype, and it was a bit of a hassle to wear. The battery life was rubbish. It was really uncomfortable.
Was the battery in the bra?
There was a battery pack kind of attached to the bra, and I think it was generally a bit of a pain to wear for the participants. But it was generally just used as a proof of concept, and Microsoft has decided that it does work as a proof of concept, but they're looking into using things like bracelets that monitor the same sort of electrical activity as well, which would then make it easier for men and women to wear. And also looking at perhaps using different types of distraction. So some people have suggested looking at something funny. Some people might prefer to, I don't know, do some puzzles. It kind of depends on the person. So, you know, not everyone wants to sit and do breathing exercises.
Is there a reason that they chose a bra? I mean, what made a bra the perfect? I mean, my first thought was because it's close to the heart.
And
if they're monitoring the heart, then maybe the readings are better in that area.
I think that is right. It's for cheaper sensors, I think, being closer to the heart is better. And also it's something that you're already wearing, so you could be kind of using your existing bra without having to have any additional kind of sensors or, you know, heart straps or whatever you might otherwise use.
I think we may have stumbled on a future trend of retrofitting underwear.
Yes, possibly.
What other uses could they have?
I don't know. But I look forward to finding out. Liat, this week it was revealed that by Edward Snowden, good old friend in Russia, that the NSA and GCHQ agents posed as undercover people on online role-playing games. Well, massively multiplayer online role-playing games, specifically World of Warcraft.
Yes, indeed.
Is there any part of our lives that NSA agents are not infiltrating?
No, there is not. And you,
that we know
you
of.
Must...
This cupboard. It's not a cupboard
no,
anymore.
No, come on. This is never... absolutely bugged.
I didn't see you much this weekend. Yeah. Where were you at 11:30?
Yeah. Well. Yes. Busted.
Yeah.
You have to read this document, courtesy, of course, of the lovely Edward Snowden, published on The Guardian's website. It's kind of hilarious because the guy who's written it, it's basically like a proposal to have more research and investment in this area because he thinks it's a juicy spot. And he's got exclamation marks all over the place. He's like, there are so many opportunities! Exclamation mark. He's like super excited about all the new ways we are going to spy on you.
So let's just give it a little bit of background here. World of Warcraft, for the uninitiated, is an online multiplayer game where you do quests, you play with other people around the world, multiplayer, doesn't matter on what language you're playing. So these people, these agents, were posing as, you know, probably in the Horde or the Alliance in World of Warcraft. And
and on Second Life, actually.
I was surprised about that's still going.
Yeah, well, this was written in 2008, this document.
Ah, that makes more sense.
So more popular then. But yeah, Xbox Live as what was flagged up as something that the GCHQ already had its eye on. The document was basically saying, this is what our friends over in Britain are doing. We're already got a few agents in there, but we think it's great and we should get involved. As she says at the top of the document, in relation to USA, Canada, Great Britain, and New Zealand. So it seems like these are the different agencies they wanted to pitch it to from different countries. So they say that it basically gives terrorists massive opportunities to, you know, get together in essentially private meeting places, their private rooms, and discuss terrorist stuff, you know, plan stuff, train. I don't know how you'd be training.
But it's a weird
fighting
one.
Orcs.
But this is the thing, it's a really weird one because in a way I don't think they're there because, you know, people are trading war and terrorist skills necessarily in World of Warcraft.
Well, maybe that's because the language in World of Warcraft is already of war. So you could go in and when you're actually a terrorist and discuss an attack and no one would be any the wiser. Surely you'd be drowned out. I don't know. I don't know if that's why they think it was a good strategy. I mean, that wouldn't work for Second Life, for example.
It does make me call into question now. When I was doing all the next-gen game reviews for the PS4 and Xbox One, one thing that stood out is that what hasn't changed between the two console generations is the number of unbroken voiced men, well, boys, on Call of Duty, screeching obscenities and, you know, all kinds of violence related wording.
How do you figure out which?
Well, maybe that's something. Really, maybe they're undercover agents.
The kids.
Maybe that's the thing. Yeah.
I would love that. They're also targeting Chinese hackers and Iranian nuclear scientists. They're very specific. Hezbollah and Hamas members. Because they said that actually it has come out in the past that terrorists have used these to communicate, but they don't divulge whether they were using them to communicate because they all happen to like World of Warcraft as well, and they're just playing.
Well, they use Flight Simulator to train for the flights, at least in part, for the attack on the trade centers.
Yes. Mm. They also say that these games can have a radicalizing effect. They're great for, because like-minded people come together and lo and behold, you just start radicalizing en masse. I don't know, apparently this is how they're posing it. And they give kind of a list of ways that list of ways that they can track people, do ID tracking, geolocation, social network analysis. They get really excited. They want to build a database and have all this information, including biometrics. So you've got all the voice data in there in order to track and link people up. And GCHQ had done this apparently to try and link Islamic extremists and arms dealers, apparently. But it doesn't say that they actually succeeded in doing that. Just that they said, "Oi, NSA, will you give us all the metadata from World of Warcraft?"
You see,
which they delivered.
About 6 months ago, everyone got very frightened about the Xbox One's Kinect sensor being always on. And everyone was sort of, I think, slightly tongue-in-cheek, but maybe also tongue not entirely in-cheek, discussing, "Oh, Kinect, NSA is going to be tapping into
now
our games next." Turns out, been happening for 6 years.
NSA was like, "Yawn, guys, we're in your house." Like, the time. We've been doing this for years. So, you know, but we don't really know what came of it, because this was in 2008, and there are a few more supporting documents also on the New York Times that you might want to check out. It was kind of a joint release on these undercover activities for these guys that somehow have made a profession of gaming and spying on people, which just sounds kind of fun, actually.
Well, if you want to find out more,
if you don't have morals,
if you want to find out more, search for Snowden MMO on wired.co.uk. Aldi. Not often we get to talk about Aldi, the discount supermarket, if that's the official term, in our podcast, but we are today because it has proven, apparently, the demand for low-cost tablet computers is not wavering, because its 7-inch offering, which I didn't even know Aldi had, has sold out entirely in 24 hours of being on sale. Now, this is the very catchily titled LifeTab E7316.
Oh, yes.
That an engineer came up with that name. which comes with a 1.6 gigahertz quad-core processor, 8 gig of memory, USB port, front and rear cameras, and a fairly standard res 124 by 600 pixel display. And this is a tablet that costs £80. You know, and this is something we've been seeing a huge amount this year, because we had the Huddle from Tesco, which you can get for £119, but if you use club cards and vouchers and discounts and things, you can get that down by a fair few tenners, I believe. And we gave that a great review, but that's got 16 gig of memory, higher resolution screen, but similar sort of size and processing power in there. There was the Argos My Tablet, which, again, similar specs, and that cost £99. It sold out as well, and the manufacturer blames that demand basically outstripped supply. But it was also kind of rumoured that the lack of these Argos tablets on shelves was basically because it was a bit crap.
Yeah, it doesn't really tally up. But I mean, the same things happen with Aldi, that they've gone and they're like, we have no plans to deliver these in the next few weeks.
A lot of the
months.
Time it's because they don't sell that, they don't make that many, and they do actually have a huge outlet. I mean, Aldi's massive. And if you put this discount tablet on there and you get people who can't afford an iPad and they see that, I mean, actually that becomes pretty compelling.
And there were pictures in the press of people kind of queuing up in advance of its launch outside. I mean, maybe they were set up, but
we have no idea how many they sold either. I rang them up to try and find out, and they were like, for commercial reasons, we can't tell you this right now. You know, so there could have been like 200.
Well, companies are usually often quite vocal about it. We had a press release come in about an hour before we recorded here that the Xbox One has now sold 2 million units in 18 days in the continuing press release standoff between Microsoft and Sony on how many consoles they've sold. Anyway, and I thought it was just worth mentioning this. And in one of our special podcasts, as mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to be discussing discount tablets, well, cheap Android tablets specifically, in more detail. But the Carphone Warehouse Evoca 7 was also released over the last few months. at the price point of £49. So even lower spec than the aforementioned cheap tablets, but it becomes so affordable that it kind of gets to the point where people apparently, and we're not parents, so we can't vouch for this, but apparently becomes a very compelling offer to give to a child who wants an iPad, but you don't want to spend £300 on something that's going to get covered in, you know, spit and sick. Again, according to parents consulted by Wider Cuddy K, specifically Andy Robertson, a few months ago. So that's it. We are going to do more on this topic in our upcoming Games and Gear special podcast. Last news item before we get into the news, Liv. National Geographic opens its cartography archive with the Google Maps engine. This is fantastic for map geeks.
Yes.
In the world.
Yeah, so National Geographic has an amazing archive of maps, of historical maps, travel maps, obviously, and reference maps. And it's going to release them to the public through a partnership with Google Maps, 500 of them. And the way it's going to do this is to... they've partnered with Google's Map Engine's public data program, which lets people use Google Maps infrastructure to create sort of custom maps in layers that they can then be searched. And so these maps from National Geographic will be laid on top of the existing locations in Google Maps so that you can browse them. And so some of the examples of things they've got there are one of medieval England, which shows Nottingham, used to be called Snottingham, which I didn't know.
Did it really?
Apparently so, at least on this map. And there's also an adventure map of the Dominican Republic, which is obviously aimed at tourists.
I mean, that's brilliant, isn't it, actually? Being able to browse medieval England maps on Google Maps.
Yeah, so you can imagine, you know, you'll be able to look at a location and look at the current map as it is now, and then look at medieval times, perhaps look at it during, you know, the Second World War, and you can imagine these layers building up and up and up.
I'd like a medieval street view.
Well, that's what this is. Well, it's not.
It's not street view.
No,
is it?
Yeah. But who knows?
Although in other news, actually, this isn't on our running order, but might as well mention it. You can now make your own street view on Google Maps. I think Liv, Katie or Leah?
I think Katie did it, didn't she,
this week? So you can now, if you've got one of the cameras that does spherical images, or I think a number of the Android cameras support it, you can now start taking your own panoramic images and make your own street views.
You can share like a hidden route somewhere that you love in the countryside.
Maybe we should do...
I wouldn't share it.
Inside the Wired podcast studio.
Yeah, well, we'll be done in like... 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Where can people... Have we got links on the website? We must have.
We have links on the website. So just look up National Geographic and Google Maps.
On wider.co.uk.
On wider.co.uk.
We'll find it.
Or Snottingham.
Yes, actually, interesting. Well, we are not going to Snottingham, but we are going into an ad break. But when we come back, we have two fantastic stories. One in the segment Sex Watch, the welcome return of Sex Watch and WWWTF. Everyone, it's getting close to Christmas. People have time off. Some lucky people have 3 weeks off. Not making any references to myself at all there. And it's a great time to get stuck into a free audiobook, which is good because as a listener of the Wired.co.uk podcast, you're still able to get a free one with Audible.co.uk. It's still offering access to a free book from a catalogue of 80,000 titles for joining a one-month free trial, which costs no pounds and no pence. And whatever book you choose is yours to keep, listen to over the festive period, over New Year perhaps. And you can cancel your account if you don't like the service, although you may do, and that's great too, of course. So if you go to audible.co.uk/wired and sign up in a few seconds, you can be downloading any book from that catalogue and enjoying it immediately after this podcast perhaps, or after some of the specials we're doing later this week. You'll be supporting our show here every week and into the new year, and you get a free book as a thank you. So that's at audible.co.uk/wired. It's time for the segment portion of this week's podcast, and we've got two corkers coming up today, and we're starting with Sex Watch. This week in Sex Watch, Liat, we're talking about love, AI virtual assistants, and creepy love affairs. Now, this is a feature you wrote this week that we could not let slip by without being discussed in extreme detail. Falling in love with AI virtual assistants, a creepy love affair nearer than you think, says Liat Clark on Wired.co.uk this week.
Oh,
what
Nate,
the H?
I would say you have quite an affinity with your devices. Don't you name them?
My iPad Mini?
Yeah.
My iPads are all named after anime characters out of Oh My Goddess or Chobits.
There you go.
So what's that one called then?
This is Chi.
Chi, and you love Chi.
Chi is from Chobits. She is a robot girl, and my iPad is named after her.
What was your previous one called?
Oh, she's the screensaver.
There's a there's a chance she's also called Chi.
Oh,
see.
Yes, but I'm not in love with my iPad Mini.
Yeah, but
I do love it as a device. But
if she started talking to you and having a chat with you in a conversation, maybe you would feel differently. And that, my friend, is the future.
Is it?
Yeah. So I spoke to a team at Nuance this week, which is they specialize in natural language software, and their system powers Siri, which we're all very familiar with. They think it's totally feasible that we're going to fall in love with our AI operating systems sooner than we think. And this picks up from an idea Spike Jones has brought to us, the wonderful world of Spike Jones, in a movie called Her, where Joaquin Phoenix falls for his OS, which happens to have the sexy Scarlett Johansson as its voice, which makes it more believable, obviously.
But is it all about the personality as well? I mean, love doesn't grow out of chips.
Of course.
It's a partnership.
Well, interesting. When I was chatting to them, and they say, you know, their system, they use natural language understanding, machine learning, context modeling, also user preferences, which I think can be quite powerful somewhere down the line when you have AI and they have your personal preferences.
Well, there's a kind of a weird sort of scenario of being able to silence your girlfriend by switching her mute button on.
People love that. It's like really? The Love Plus game, you know, in Japan.
Yes. Oh, God, they go to actual stores and play that in person.
Yeah. Like, take them to cafes for dates.
They do.
They marry them.
Mm-hmm. Well, a woman the other day married a Ferris wheel called Bruce.
Okay, there's a lot of weird people in the world. But yeah. But a lot of us love our devices, and you kind of anthropomorphize them, and, you know, you can become quite attached to them. And John West, the senior solution architect at Nuance, says that their systems now, you can interact much more naturally. It has a more natural voice. It can understand your intent. It can now, in devices next year, it will be able to kind of have a much more natural conversation, whereby it corrects misinformation, and as you're having a conversation with it, it might start to adapt its answers according to the new information you're giving it. And that, combined with the preferences, and they've got this system called Wintermute, which basically connects it via the cloud to your car and your home. So you walk into the house and you're like, hey, put on that track I like in the car, and she's like, yeah man, I will, and puts it up. And so
she
it
is
becomes
very willing.
She's willing and ready, and this is what Joaquin was finding. I mean if you look at the trailer for this film, it looks really romantic, but I think super creepy. Like, he's a really lonely guy. He even has to tell the OS at the beginning. It asks a few questions, you know, who do you live with? What do you do for a living? And it finds out that he's lonely, has a bad relationship with his mum, and, you know, he's just had a breakup, because the OS system goes through his emails, finds out he's just had his heart broken, and then starts going, what is love? And
well, surely you must know what love is, because, I mean, if it was something you had a romantic partnership with, it would be, intellectually, you'll be permanently challenged, because it's kind of like playing against a Scrabble machine that has all the English words ever in its lexicon to just dump on you, and you think you're playing smart, and then it comes out with, you know, Quetzalcoatl on two triple word scores, and you're like, my girlfriend's so smart, I'm going to install her and put something stupid on it.
Like, no, but at the same time, it's learning from you, like, you know, AI is going to be constantly learning from you and your interactions and building on it, just like IBM Watson, you know, it's building up that information that it can't necessarily learn just from you feeding stuff into it. It can learn from human interactions, I think.
But that, I mean, that's one of the next steps in conversations that you can have with these devices. I mean, Siri at the moment is, I mean, it's not that smart. It's, you know, very, very early days. But you'd still have to say something like, find me a restaurant tonight. And it might show you some restaurants nearby. And you then say, no, I only want Chinese. It would see that as a separate request. It wouldn't understand that you have previously asked for a restaurant, and it means you want a Chinese restaurant.
I thought Siri had started to incorporate kind of conversational search. And Google Now has also started to do something
similar.
Google Now has. Google Now is becoming much more advanced. It doesn't sound as good.
Mm. And Siri's better. It's not as glamorous.
But also, Google has a lot more information about you, which Siri doesn't have.
Yeah,
Siri doesn't store all your data. Well, at least not in the cloud. It, you know, it has the data on your mobile phone, but that's it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have have access to all your, you know, search histories and everything like that.
I look forward to a future where I'm basically just in a relationship with a tablet computer. I mean, it makes the concept of having to back up a lot more... it's a lot more important,
there's
isn't it?
There's a few, like, crucial elements to a relationship that I don't think you're going to get from a tablet.
Such as?
The physical... act of love.
Come on, there are dolls for that. You can probably hook it up into one of those creepy dolls.
I don't know how that would work.
You would sync your OS with your creepy vibrating doll.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Liat.
Sorted. Well, we have Liat's feature on the website if you want to learn more about this. Falling in love with AI on wired.co.uk is a search term that will take you straight to it. Next in our second and final discussion segment of the show today in WWWTF.
What the?
The challenges, Liv, of pitching a lesbian dating app are apparently very numerous.
Yes.
And you have been looking into this and we wanted to share...
Yes.
Some of your discoveries about this.
So I recently met with Robin Exton, who is the founder of a dating app for lesbians called Datch. And she's a lovely woman, but she was talking to me about some of the trials and tribulations of pitching her app to investors, which she's been doing quite regularly. And she talked to me about a few of the comments and questions that she's received over the last few months.
Just before we get into those, this app, is it like... the Grindr app for men, for gay men?
It's essentially, well, to a certain degree it is. I mean, it's very different from the Grindr app in its approach. It's been built by women for women, and I think it initially had the location-based Grindr is about who's nearest, who I can meet up with, whereas Datch is more kind of Pinterest style boards of women, so you can get a sense of like people's interests. Mm. Because as she's discovered, women don't want to go on a date in the next 4 hours. They want to go on a date perhaps in a week, have a bit of time to prepare. They're a little bit less impulsive perhaps in the dating scene. At least that's what the findings have revealed.
I see.
So it's a dating app designed specifically for women, and some of the comments that Robin has received in her pitches include, "You'll need to stop showing pictures of lesbian couples in your deck." That was from one investor. And
why?
Well, the investor was actually trying to be helpful. He was saying that most investors are, unfortunately, men in their 40s, or fortunately, and they don't tend to see that many lesbian couples unless it's through pornography. And so while she's pitching her app, she wants them to listen to her pitch as opposed to kind of salivating at the pictures of lesbians making out.
I see.
And so he recommended that she didn't put them in because it was going to be distracting.
She's allowed to have it in her final product.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely in the final product.
Investors aren't going to freak out. There are lesbians on your lesbian dating app.
No, well, other gems include, "You couldn't possibly be a lesbian, you've got long hair." "You should probably dress a little less like a woman to make people perhaps feel more comfortable with the fact that she was interested in women." "I just find the whole concept of a lesbian app bizarre because I don't know any lesbians," I think was the follow-up comment to that one. And the final one, which I thought was amazing, is, "I think you need to refine your strapline to clarify what you do, and I would suggest Datch because lesbians get lonely too."
You may as well say, because lesbians are people too.
Yeah, they are also human beings. Yeah, exactly.
I suppose, at least on the one point, it is technically true.
It is, but it's as if they're not human beings.
Yeah.
I mean, you get the concept of a dating app. Do you need to then clarify the fact that lesbians have similar needs?
Why are people using this again?
But yes, so it's been designed. It's all very much catering for women, and they're adding lots of interesting features, some of which I'm not allowed to talk about, but will be emerging over the next couple of weeks, which will be extremely interesting. But another challenge that Robin has had to contend with is the fact that loads of guys are trying to join the app. Gets about between 3 and 5 men every day trying to join Datch. Some of them are just out and out admit they want to meet lesbians, and some of them are pretending to be women in the hope that perhaps down the line they can introduce a kind of quote unquote boyfriend who could then have a threesome. And as Robin kind of very clearly pointed out, is that although there are bisexual women on the app, they've joined the lesbian dating app because they want to meet women, not because they want to meet men. And in fact, all the actual lesbians in the app aren't interested in men. You know, so
the strap line obviously needs tweaking.
I think there's been a little slight misunderstanding of the meaning of the word lesbian amongst some of these men.
Generally just among all the men, investors. This is like, you know, that platform we spoke about a couple of weeks ago where you basically sign up to sleep at someone's house.
Oh, yes.
And it's like a creepy, weird dating site.
I love that.
Well, that was like all men signing up. I clicked through pages and pages and pages of really excited looking man faces and like the odd woman thrown in. They're just, they're up for... you know, adventure.
But it's definitely part of a new breed of dating apps. You know, we've seen Tinder, which is really fun. I was actually last night having a play with my housemates on Tinder, and I was having a play
my
with it, and it was just
on Tinder.
I was going to say, it's all you non-single people are sort of like polluting the Tinder market. It's so fun.
It is really fun, and actually, you know, it makes so much sense. It suddenly make dating much more social. I mean, I think traditionally, although most of us are kind of early adopters, a lot of people still feel a bit weird about online dating. And I think having it as an app, having it as something really fun and shareable, people are doing it more publicly with their friends. And also an app means that you can look at your dating site whenever you want, even if you're at work, rather than having to kind of hide your screen and check out those.
I agree. I think the most interesting thing though about dating sites and specifically the apps is that by, you know, even 5 years ago, you wouldn't be able to specifically target someone in your vicinity without saying, I want to meet someone in this particular area. But because the smartphones all have GPS and they have Wi-Fi and so on and so forth, it does mean that these people can say, well, okay, I'm just looking for people who are walking by. It's like, I like the look of them. They're 97 yards away, single. Maybe I'll message them and say, hey, I see you're near the WH Smiths. You fancy coming around the back?
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I'm not speaking from experience, I hasten to add, but I do have several friends who have done it that way.
Great.
They've done it that quickly.
Yeah. I had a friend who doesn't listen to the podcast, thankfully, who went, she was in Camden and she just needed a place to crash for a night.
Oh gosh, she needed
And she went on Tinder and she got a place to crash and had a bit of sexy time and got a free place to stay.
That's how you get murdered. Like, am I like a real...
No, not everyone on a dating site is a murderer.
Come on, guys. Just staying with a random stranger who's round the corner.
Lots of people do that every Saturday night. Yeah, I think you're being prude.
I was basically raised by three men who told me serial killers and attackers.
There is totally a sitcom in this entire conversation. Well, anyway, if you want to learn more about what Liv learnt about Datch, if you search for Datch on wired.co.uk, that's D-A-T-T-C-H, you will find the whole story. Well, that's going to do it for this week, and we are going to be back. Liv will be in charge of the show next week. I will be horizontal, probably playing Ni No Kuni, which I never played on the PS3 when it came out, to my dismay. So I'll be doing that. And we will have three fantastic special editions of the .co.uk podcast coming out over the next couple of weeks. See you later.
Bye.
Cheerio.
You've finished this week's episode of the Wired.co.uk podcast. Until next week's episode, why not download the latest issue of Wired on your iPad, Android tablet or Kindle Fire? Do so with a discount from wired.co.uk/magazine.
It's the worst birthday ever. Oh, if you lot weren't here, I'd be really miserable.
Well, we are here.
You made me laugh. And
we are here. I've never seen you cry that hard, actually.
That was
with
so
laughter.
Funny.